IVM.
Welcome to All Things Policy, a daily podcast by the Takshashila Institution. We are a bunch of policy nerds based in Bengaluru, and we like bringing fresh perspectives to Indian affairs and Indian perspectives to global affairs. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and join us for today's chat.
Hello and welcome to All Things Policy. I'm your host, Shri Krishna Upadhyaya. And the guest on the show today is Ashwin Prasad. Ashwin is a research analyst with the Space Power Program at Takshashila. Welcome to All Things Policy, Ashwin.
Hey, Shri. It's great to be here.
So, Ashwin, you recently wrote about the reform that the government brought in the space sector, in the FDI policy or the foreign direct investment policy in the space sector. And this has sort of set off waves of happiness among the space sector enthusiasts in the country. What is the reason for it? What is this new change in FDI policy that we should all be talking about?
So the government has liberalized the FDI policy for the space sector. Specifically, they looked at the subsector of satellites within space and they categorized these into three activities. And each of these activities, depending on their proximity to military applications, have liberalized thresholds for FDIs. So there is subsystem manufacturing of satellites has a higher FDI limit, then something which is critical to national security like spaceports and launch vehicles, those have a 49% limit. But on the automatic route, if companies want to invest beyond this limit, then they can always do so through the government route. But through the automatic route, the limits have been raised. And this is huge for the space sector in India, especially with all the new startups that are coming up and trying to make a space for themselves in this sector.
Right. And like you rightly mentioned, in India, under the FDI policy, there are two routes to invest. One is the automatic route and one is the government route. So this liberalization is actually increasing the thresholds for FDI investment in the space sector and bringing them under the automated route, if I understand it correctly.
Exactly. In the past, if a company had to invest in Indian space sector, they had to do so through the government route only. So there was no automatic route at all. Now there is a significant portion of the FDI can come in through the automatic route. And in some cases, it is up to 100%. So this is great for the industries, obviously.
Right. Like, for example, for launch vehicles, it's 49% under automatic route and rest is under the government route. And similarly, for satellites, to 74%, it's under the automatic route, while rest is under the government route. And for certain, you know, components and systems and subsystems for satellites, it's 100% automatic route.
Yes,
so this is
yes.
Great news for all the companies which are sort of innovating in this sector, especially a lot of space startups that have come up in the last few years. You know, just to sort of trace the history of space reforms, which, you know, started very few years ago, in fact, in 2020, during the pandemic, when the government decided to privatize the space sector. Earlier, it was reserved for the government and only, you know, government-led institutions such as ISRO and some other players were participating. But since then, there has been a boom. We have so many startups. Some of them have even grown so much over the years that they can no longer be called startups, at least in terms of their size and investment and their capabilities and so on. So what has really changed? If you could, you know, tell us post 2020, what are the key steps that the government has taken to make space innovation in the country a reality? What is the background of these reforms look like?
So the space sector was, like you mentioned, completely under the government's role before. It was these space agencies owned by the government that were operating in the space sector, even in India, especially in India, we had ISRO. And what happened in the last 4 or 5 years is that the government started to incentivize the non-governmental private entities to be a part of this domain. They didn't want this to be exclusive to the government anymore. So they have been, you know, announcing a slew of reforms since 2020 that has followed the blueprint of liberalizing the sector, which has finally brought us to these FDI policy amendments today. But in 2020, what they did was they announced the creation of this body called InSpace. And this was a single window regulator for all things space in India, and they would also help you if a space company wanted to use the infrastructure that ISRO has. Then they would help you do that. They would also help with technology transfers. This was a major step, but the issue with this step was that there was no regulatory clarity. It was just an announcement. So this was followed by a space policy, which was announced in 2023. This gave more clear guidelines, and it kind of made it clear what these reforms were all about, what InSpace was all about. And finally, now they have come to the funding aspect of it, and they have announced these FDI reforms. And the effect of these reforms are visible. You know, we have more than 200 space startups in this as of the beginning of this year. And this was somewhere in the single digits a few years ago. So, yeah, this is great.
Yeah, that's great news. But if I had to put it to you this way, right? Earlier, you know, when government liberalized the space sector in 2020, the refrain from the industry and other stakeholders was that there is still a lot left to be desired in terms of concrete policy. And there was also discussion around national space legislation, which has not seen the day till today. But of course, the 2023 policy, like you said, helped clear up things a lot. So in your opinion, do you think there is sufficient regulatory or at least governance clarity in the space sector today?
There can always be more clarity, but it is still a very good start. You know, compared to where we were, this is still a great start. We know where the direction is going to be. The government has made its position clear, and it's been acting in that same pattern since then. So that is good for the confidence of the industry in this sector in terms of what the government expects them to do and what the government desires. So I think that is good. More clarity is needed, and there is a space activities bill which is coming up, and all of that will happen in due course, I'm sure. But it's the right direction.
Yeah. And also, you happen to say that, you know, InSpace is the regulator, but isn't it more of like a quasi-regulator, because it doesn't really have, or it's rather not set up by, say, any act of the parliament as a regulator as such, but has been bestowed upon with a lot of regulatory functions by the space policy. Is that a correct characterization?
That is a correct characterization, and that is in fact one of the limitations of InSpace, because it is both a regulator and a promoter.
Yeah.
And that is a tricky thing to reconcile. And like all the independent regulators we have, like we have the TRAI, which has its own statutory backing. And similarly, it would be good for InSpace to also have independent statutory backing so that it can function and perform its role in an independent and an effective manner. And that is something that the government should definitely consider as it goes forward.
Right. Of course, in terms of just policy design, having both functions of promoting and participating in the space sector itself, as well as being a regulator for the other entities, can throw up problems. But one may also argue that these are the early days for the space growth in the space industry in the country. And this problem is going to come, but it's not an immediate concern. Maybe a few decades away, or as the industry grows, we might need more regulatory clarity on that aspect. So let's go back to our initial discussion on, you know, the liberalization that this new amendments to the FDI policy has brought about. So you said that, of course, it's obvious that it is going to benefit the players. Now, foreign investors can directly put in their capital into these companies. But are there some companies which stand more to gain? Is there a sort of like an advantage to some sort of players today because, you know, they can access foreign capital? Is that the situation?
That is definitely true. To give you a picture, let me just, draw an outline of what the space industry looks like. You can broadly divide the industry into upstream and downstream activities. You know, in upstream activities, you can think about the activities which develop space assets. These can be a port for launching, space payloads. Maybe it's developing a launch vehicle itself, a rocket which can carry payloads to the orbit or to even the moon, in fact. These are developing assets which can enable the use of space. And then there are downstream activities which are enabled because of the upstream activity. So once you launch a satellite and you put it in orbit, and then you get a lot of data from this satellite. And using that data, you can come up with products and services which are beneficial to various economic and social areas of a normal person's daily life. So that is a downstream sector. To give you examples, launching a rocket and putting it into orbit, that would be an upstream activity. But using, suppose let's say that this is a navigational satellite, using the positioning, timing and navigational service out of the satellite, and let's say guiding a truck or guiding a drone on a certain place within India, that's a downstream application. So these things, the tricky part about the space sector is that the downstream applications are many, and most of the startups we have in the country, most of the startups we have in the world, in fact, are concentrated in the downstream area because they are diverse and they're enabled by the IT revolution we have today, the edge computing, AI, and all of the IT, the benefits of the IT revolution. And they are able to, capitalize on it and deliver services to various sectors. But these things hinge on the upstream being successful. We need more satellites. We need more. We need more of this infrastructure to enable it. So, the same way, the capital investments into the upstream needs to be high, because it is, all things said and done, a riskier endeavor compared to what you do in the downstream. The chances of failure is definitely present, and a company, even if it has to start, needs a lot of financial investment in terms of time, cap, all of that is high compared to a downstream activity which can function with a lesser investment, and it can give quicker results and quicker profits. So what ends up happening, especially in Indian space sector, is that a lot of venture capitalist firms prefer to invest in the downstream activities. And there are a lot of upstream players who are getting funding, but this needs to be more. And it needs patient capital. It needs long-term capital that so that it can function well. And this is where I think the FDI policy can help, because it will decentralize the investment decisions. We will get capital from abroad. The access will be a lot wider, and it can definitely help the upstream sector and therefore the downstream sector as well.
Stay tuned to All Things Policy. We'll be right back after a short commercial break. That's a fantastic point you make there, because I think only when the upstream sector continues to grow and increase its capability, can there be more and more activities downstream. So it's sort of like contingent upon it. And your argument that the FDI liberalization is definitely going to help the upstream companies is valid, because the foreign investors might be more risk-taking than the domestic ones. They might have access to deeper pockets that they can put in, and they might also bring in their technology. They can sort of start setting up subsidiaries and so on in the country to start manufacturing here. So I see a lot of positive consequences arising out of this particular policy measure. So that's a good note. So coming to the role of the government in the future, now that the government has sort of taken a stance that we're going to let the private sector in, let them innovate, let them build, manufacture, even launch satellites, and until they develop their own launch capacity, the government is willing to allow them the use of premises of ISRO and so on. What, according to you, should be the priority for the government now at this stage, right? Because liberalization in space sector is also relatively new. It's just about less than 5 years, right? And the government has had a space program for many decades. It has fantastic technology, capacity and all that. But now that's slowly going to change because our private sector is being boosted thanks to these liberalization measures. So in this sort of a setup, what do you think the government's priority should be? What should the government be looking at doing in the next few years so that it can boost the space sector even further?
So now that the FDI reforms are done and the foreign capital can come in, it doesn't necessarily mean that it will actually come in, right? The doors are open, but what will happen remains to be seen. And in this, a government has a big role to play, because as you know, the space sector was dominated by government agencies all these decades. And ISRO has built up a lot of technological capability in this sector. And now that the private industry is starting here, it is important that this private industry does not reinvent the wheel. They be given access to this technological capability that ISRO has built over the years so that they can start from there. They get an advantage because after all, they are competing with other foreign space companies for the funding. So it is important that the government transfers its technology and enables the private industry to, you know, get a competitive edge. As far as the supply, the capability of supply is concerned, technology transfers are definitely necessary. But there is also a question of demand. The space industry, I've read this mentioned somewhere that the space industry sells a lot of solutions to problems that don't exist yet. This is a tricky statement to figure out, but I think it is true. Because it's a risky endeavor. For instance, the last three non-governmental private landers on the moon have failed. All three failed, except the most recent one, which is by one of the private companies called Intuitive Machines, which actually finally succeeded. It was a partial success, but still, that shows you that this is a very risky thing to carry out for the private industry. The risk of failure is high, and it's still the future of the space sector is definitely, you know, going to be. It's going to play a huge role in the way we live in this world. It's going to play a huge influential role, but the thing is, it is still getting there. And until that point, the government has to support the industry by being a buyer, you know, by purchasing long-term, by signing long-term purchase agreements with these industries, by signing contracts and, you know, giving them funding beforehand, giving them the flexibility to innovate and come up with solutions for what the government needs. By doing this, the government will help this industry, you know, like really innovate and really put in money into their R&D and do well, all things said and done. So that is definitely important, and that is what India should be doing. That is what the Indian government should be doing. It should be telling what it needs from the industry and letting the industry figure it out and manage it on its own. This is similar to what NASA has been doing. There are various programs. There is one called COTS and there's one another called CLPS. As part of CLPS, the Commercial Lunar Payload Services, they fund private companies to put payloads on the moon, to put their payloads on the moon. And this, in one of these contracts signed with a Texas-based company, I think, called Intuitive Machines, this was signed in 2018, if I remember correctly. And they have finally been able to autonomously land on the moon and put some of NASA's payloads there. It still tilted over and it, you know, fell to the side, but it still was a successful landing. And that shows how much of a long horizon this needs and how much government support is necessary. Indian government can also explore these possibilities to support its industry.
Right. That's fair. I like how you put it, because I think now the role of the government has shifted from being a both producer and consumer of space services now to being a larger consumer, so to speak, and leaving the production part to the private industry so that over time they can pick up the skills, the necessary technical know-how and the capabilities to manufacture not just for the government, but hopefully for a larger private demand as well in the future. The government, of course, needs to do some amount of hand-holding, like you said, at least now, since the industry is in a very fledgling state. But at what point do you think there will be sufficient private sector demand for space services in the country? Or do you think that is something that is organically going to come with the growth, because that will open up possibilities, right? Like, for example, if there are Indian players putting satellites in the space, then there'll be Indian telecom companies who are willing to lease these satellites for providing internet services here, right? So, is it also that as and when the supply sort of like showcases what it is capable of, that there'll be newer forms of demand that will come up, so that although the government support is required, like you said, but the private industry can also jump in to kick off a virtuous cycle in the space industry.
Yes, there are definitely questions of profitability and sustainability now, because the space sector is still emerging. It is still on its rise. It is not peaked yet. It is far, far from peaking. But like you said, I believe that there will be like a natural demand for this, and there will be a very good functioning market for this in the coming years. We are not there yet. We are in some sectors, but we are not completely there yet. For instance, in-flight connectivity, IFC, is something that was not all that talked about before, but now suddenly so many of the airlines, especially in the US, are trying to offer in-flight connectivity, and there are a lot of private players coming up to offer this. So these applications will continue to grow, and we live in a world which is enabled a lot by terrestrial technology, but I really see a world in a few years, a few decades from now perhaps, where a lot of the technology that drives our world will not be terrestrial but will be from the space. Right now the costs are high. For instance, to run a telecom service to provide internet connectivity from the ground is cheaper than giving that connectivity from space. But as our technology advances, as our capabilities grow, we will definitely be able to overcome these cost boundaries, and we will be able to do more from space. And that's where we can really scale. We will be able to scale a lot more there. So I think in the future, in the foreseeable future, there will be a demand for this, and there will be private players naturally catering to the demand, and the government support might not be all that necessary. But I don't exactly know when that point is going to come. It is, countries need to have that long-term thinking in their policy decisions. And they need to try and enable their industry so that they, as an entire nation, India has the capability to, be a powerful space power when that day comes.
All right, that's fantastic. Thank you so much, Ashwin, for joining me today on All Things Policy and taking us through the journey of Indian space sector till date. And may the march of policy reforms continue. It is always a good thing to sit on All Things Policy and discuss about, good and positive policy reforms brought in by the government. So thanks once again for joining me, and I'll be glad to have you back again on All Things Policy.
Thank you, Shri. This has been amazing. I had a lot of fun discussing this. Looking forward to the next time I get here.
If you liked our show, don't forget to check out other interesting podcasts on the IVM network. You can tune into them on the IVM Podcast app, ivmpodcast.com, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also follow IVM on social media. The handle is @IVMPodcasts on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And hey, if you'd like to dive into Takshashila's research on technology, strategy, and economic affairs, check us out at our Twitter handle @TakshashilaInst or our website takshashila.org.in.
Hey, it's been another great week on the IVM Podcast Network. On All Things Policy, Ananya Desai and Rohan Pai discuss recurrent bans on fireworks during festive seasons in India and discuss possible solutions to tackle India's air pollution problem. On the Habit Coach podcast, Ashton Doctor welcomes Sahil Mehta, an esteemed mountaineer and author of the book Break Free. Sahil shares a transformative experience which became the catalyst for embracing discipline and fulfillment. The episode explores the profound impact of vulnerability on personal growth. Folks, if you like our shows, do spread the word. Tell your friends and don't forget to rate and review them wherever you're listening to them. Follow us on social media. We are IVM Podcasts on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. You'll also find all our shows on YouTube at youtube.com/IVM Podcasts. And finally, we would like to thank our sponsors this week. Omidyar Network India, Abbott, IDFC First Bank, and Save Life Foundation. Thank you for making this possible.